Was there an Adam? Was there an Eve? Or did we evolve from what we conceived? Either way, we got what we needed when the sun shone down on the Garden of Eden.
Yeah. I can't hear you. Come here, I'm on the radio. Okay.
And so we went digging into the ground and started to burn many things we found, but...
Yes, we did. We went digging into the ground and we started to burn too many things we found. This is Harvey Wasserman. We're here for another hour of the Soarotopia Green Power and Wellness Show. We're joined once again for the second straight week by the great Greg Palast, who's on the phone with us. First, Greg, I'd like to do a rundown, a catch-up on all the latest developments in the nuclear power scene. This morning I posted a piece at nukefree.org, www.nukefree.org. The new chair of the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, Allison McFarlane, is actually written up about her by Matt Walden, the New York Times, and points out, she says she thinks the nuclear waste problem can be solved, which at least she's an optimist, but she also is a geologist. She's a trained geologist. And she says that she's concerned about the earthquake problems at our nuclear plants. And one of the important things that's come out of Fukushima is the realization that the accident there, the catastrophe there, was really not caused by the tsunami. The tsunami made things more difficult, to be sure. But Fukushima, the three reactors that melted there, God, I never thought I'd say that, the three reactors that melted there, that was all caused by the earthquake, or almost all of it. And that has huge implications for the rest of the nuclear plants all over the world, because so many of them, including Indian Point in New York, and the four reactors at the, in California, the two at Diablo Canyon, two at San Onofre. We've had nuclear plants damaged in both Virginia and Ohio by earthquakes. If anything will put our nuclear power plants, nuclear reactors at risk, it's earthquakes. Don't you agree, Greg Palast?
Yeah, it's the earth. Well, it's actually, no. It's earthquakes did not melt Fukushima, Harvey. I'm going to have to correct you. Lies. Lies, greed, small-mindedness, and
idiocy.
A complete disregard for burning your fellow men's DNA out of their cells is what took down Fukushima. And
right.
I would like to thank Harvey Wasserman and Bob Fetragis for publishing the story Fukushima, They Knew, written by the investigative reporter Greg Palast, which is a segment of my last book, Vulture's Picnic. And yes, it was not only earthquakes, but they knew that these plants couldn't withstand an earthquake, because if you go to actually freepress.org and read that segment of my book, you will see that when I was investigating nuclear plants for the U.S. government, the state government in New York, I discovered that nuclear plant earthquake proofing tests had been faked by the biggest builder of nuclear plants on the planet, Stone and Webster.
Right.
And I have the notebooks of the engineers, including this one. I'm quoting from a nuclear engineer's notebook. It said, Wiesel was very upset. This guy named Bob Wiesel was in charge of earthquake-proofing tests for the companies at America's plants. Wiesel was very upset. He seemed very nervous, very agitated. He said, the plants are riddled with problems that no way on earth could stand an earthquake, that the components would, quote, completely and utterly fail during an earthquake. This is from an internal notebook of the engineers who built these nuclear plants. They
right, and this was known, actually, to the Nuclear Regulatory Commission 30 years ago. There was a report on the Mark I reactor containment, which is the General Electric containment that was at Fukushima Unit 1 and is at 23 reactors in the United States. And the chairman of the Nuclear Regulatory Commission at the time, Joseph Hendry, basically said that he was having a nervous breakdown because the weakness of the Mark I was so self-evident. But he knew that if they disallowed it, which they absolutely positively should have done, that it would have been the end of nuclear power in this country.
Yeah.
So
well,
instead, we're just going to risk the end of the country.
Yeah, well, instead, and as you know, so one of the ways they overcame these problems was by simply faking the tests. They do tests on these plants, and they just lie. They commit a fraud. Now, you have to understand, Harvey, that, you know, as an investigative reporter, I put these things out, et cetera. But then I was working for the government, and we put this information, we put those notebooks, we put the witnesses, we put the company in front of a federal jury, and the jury found them guilty, liable, for lying about the earthquake proofing at the nuclear plants. Now, I got to tell you, the company was hit for a $4 billion, and its co-conspirator hit for $4 billion by the jury. Supposedly, they were put out of business, but then they came back, like all corporate shifters, at something called Shaw Construction. Shaw Construction, which today has been designated the builder of all four reactors that have been approved, new reactors approved by the Obama administration, and given the contract to rebuild, clean up, and rebuild Fukushima, the Fukushima station. This is the same company, again, that faked the earthquake proofing test in the first place. And again, it's not Greg Palast saying it. It's a federal, I uncovered it, but it's a federal jury which made that decision. But, you know, what does that mean? It basically, we are letting, you know, you're just saying to the mafia, as long as they change their name to the Girl Scouts, they can go back into the murder business.
Right. We're talking with Greg Palast, the great investigative reporter, covering beginning our show, as I almost always do, with a discussion of nuclear power. I've also posted at nukefree.org a very, really disturbing piece about mutant butterflies turning up at Fukushima. We have a history of mutant plants and animals turning up around nuclear reactors. It's happened at Three Mile Island. Actually, the initial most powerful evidence of major problems at Three Mile Island came from the animals. The Department of Agriculture of the state of Pennsylvania did a study of farm animal mutations around Three Mile Island after the accident and found serious, shall we say, unexplained problems with the farm and wild animals in the area. And of course, the industry at the time was saying that all the human problems that we knew were happening, and I did spend a week in central Pennsylvania, the worst week of my life actually, interviewing people whose families have been decimated by, these are human beings whose families have been decimated by radiation from Three Mile Island, and the industry was coming back and saying, well, it was all psychological. You were worried about the radioactivity, and therefore all these health problems happened. But the dogs and the cats, I saw a dog that had been born with no eyes, cats that could not walk, had no sense of balance, bees disappeared, birds, songbirds disappeared, the horses couldn't reproduce. I mean, it was a horrifying, it's like being in a Japanese science fiction movie, and these animals apparently were not listening to the radio or reading the newspaper, so clearly no psychological damage. What we have now at Fukushima is the first report I've seen of mutant animals. There's a picture of this butterfly that's just absolutely twisted right out of a science fiction movie. So we're also getting reports from the Fukushima area of heavy thyroid radiation in the children, starting to get reports of birth defects. Last week, I put up a piece actually also, The Devil Still Has Us Death Dancing at Fukushima, which talks about a book which is written by a woman named Cecile Pineda, Devil's Tango, How I Learned the Fukushima Step by Step. And we're talking about, she has a major section, deeply disturbing, on human health effects around Chernobyl and in Iraq and Bosnia, where we've used depleted uranium weapons. The birth defect rates in those two countries, Iraq and Bosnia, are just completely off the charts. Children being born deformed, and stillbirth, malformations, everything you never want to hear, infant mortality, completely off the charts. Yes, Greg.
Oh, okay. I was whispering to Zach here to put up the Fukushima story from freepress.org and from Vultures Picnic on the homepage at gregpalast.com right now. So those who want to, 2 minutes. He's holding up, Or is that actually a very nasty gesture in Britain? But I'll assume he means 2 minutes. And
in two minutes to be able to download
completely and utterly fail in an earthquake, the Fukushima story you didn't hear on CNN from your wonderful rag free press at gregpalast.com. And get that information, because you have to understand that in the end, what kills us is it's not the Framus or the Freemus, and we end up getting caught in these guys' discussions of, well, if the problem is that that was the Mark 1, now we have the Mark 17 and a half, and that was Generation 3, and now we're in Generation 7 and a half. And you know, all the baloney that there's always a technical fix. Don't worry, we can solve the waste problem. We have a toilet roll bigger than Long Island, and so everything gets wiped clean. That's, you know, so they're going to have a way to fix the waste problem. The problem, what they can't fix, is the lie problem, the fraud problem, the racketeering and juice payoff, payola, bribery, political machinations problem, which is at the heart of nuclear power. This is all about lies, Harvey. They lie to make money, because to build a nuclear plant safely, if you could do such a thing, would be, it's already ridiculously expensive. More expensive than solar power, certainly more expensive than wind power, intensely hundredfold more expensive than simple conservation, and yet it's a fragment of what it would cost to build anything that's close to a relatively safe nuclear plant. So it can't be. And we have to get rid of the lies, and we're not going to get rid of it because it's the same characters. And I got to tell you, the guys who've been designated to build the nuclear plants in the USA, like I say, these people were found guilty by a jury of fraud and racketeering in the building of a nuclear plant on the issues of cost and safety. These are the same guys. They're literally letting the bank robbers, giving them licenses to operate banks.
Right. And just to kind of wrap up on the nuclear, the thing that has always disturbed me, I've been doing fighting nukes since 1973, so it's almost 40 years, and nothing has disturbed me more than the stories coming out of Chernobyl about in the Chernobyl area, about the birth defects, the horrifying mutations that have been suffered by the children born in Ukraine and Belarus downwind from the radiation from Chernobyl. And Cecile Pineda talks about that in The Devil's Tango. There are photographs. I read one statistic horrifying that said downwind in Belarus and Ukraine, 20% of the children are born normal. I'll repeat that, 20% of the children are born normal downwind from this nuclear plant, which means that 4 out of 5 children born near Chernobyl are birth defected. It's horrifying, and it's what we're going to see at Fukushima, no doubt about it. If you really want to get your mind blown, take a look at the picture of the butterfly posted at nukefree.org today. Yes, Greg, sorry, go ahead.
No, we need to know this. Actually, it's very personal here at gregpalast.com, because our webmaster, who is from the Ukraine, his mother, who's a doctor there, and treated lots of those victims and workers who died from radiation burns. She herself, our webmaster's mother, has thyroid cancer, and this is, and she was more than 100 miles away. Our friends who are there in the Ukraine, 100 miles away, they still cannot play in their playgrounds. You have to understand that when you are, and that's the other thing about Fukushima. You know, we talk about the forms are really the most terrible things. And, of course, you can't relate death and real estate. But these are people who've farmed these areas. I met, and you met one of the farmers there from the prefecture, who had an organic farm, ironically. And you know, they've been there for endless generations. And now there's just no way that they're going back.
No.
They're done. I mean, and that's how we beat, and here I'm speaking to you from Long Island, where we got the Shoreham plant torn down after operating one day, and after $20 billion in one day of operation. But one way we beat it is that we simply overlaid the cloud from Chernobyl, the what's called the ingestion zone, where you can no longer grow crops, and we laid it over Long Island, and basically said every farm on Long Island, virtually every single farm in Long Island would have to be abandoned for a minimum of 50 years. And when the locals saw that, they said, no thanks. And I think that's very, very important. People have to understand that this is, that Fukushima isn't there. It's here. That's why I call that chapter of Vulture's Picnic, I call it Fukushima, Texas. It's here.
Well, we know that the radioactive cloud from Chernobyl arrived on the California coast within 10 days in 1986, and that immediately after that, the bird birth rate in the Point Reyes National Seashore, which was being monitored in a 10-year, more than 10 years, dropped 60%.
Yeah, my
so I'll say that again. 10 days after Chernobyl, a radioactive cloud came in California and dropped the bird birth rate 60%. So, and one of the devastating things about Cecil Pineda's Devil's Tango is the discussions of Bosnia and Iraq. You know, we really waged a nuclear war on these countries using depleted uranium shells, and the people there are paying the price. So, enough of this happy talk here about nuclear power. I want to slip in one thing. The Olympics are over. I actually watched more of the Olympics this time than any other in history because the timing worked out, you know, just watching in the evening, and the events were amazing. And, of course, now the great Dave Zirin, who writes sports from a leftist perspective, is talking about the huge bill that was run up in London for security. I guess London was really turned into a concentration camp, basically, with the security there. But it was fun to watch the events. And I want to say the one story that was not, well, there are many, but one of the stories, the major story that was not covered was that the American, who, of whom we're all so proud, who won his, 21st, 22nd gold medals and silver medals, more medals than has ever been won by any Olympian, right?
Yeah.
The swimmer, what was his name, the swimmer at the Olympics?
Phelps.
Michael Phelps, right?
Mm-hmm.
Michael Phelps is a pothead, for God's sakes. Michael Phelps, the winner of more medals than any other Olympian in modern history, was busted for smoking pot.
Well,
and,
the thing is, though,
he
don't,
kind
don't
of apologized.
Sort but of. He, remember, he didn't inhale because it kept getting wet.
He tried. With a great big bong, you know. I mean, come on. You know, so this is a great victory for all the potheads of the world. I mean, you know, here's another guy, along with the last three presidents of the United States, who smoked pot, and here he goes winning the,
instead of carrying the American flag, he should have carried, like the three-leaf symbol there.
Yes, exactly. So,
one for us. Actually, they should have figured it out because his nickname was Yellow Submarine, so.
Is that his nickname? Yeah, we like
No,
that.
I just made that up, Harvey,
oh, okay.
but I'm not saying. since we have to get off, you know, after we've just been talking about frying butterflies in Fukushima, I just figured, let's at least.
Well, we knew it was a dead giveaway.
A little bit lighter.
It was a dead giveaway when he looked at his gold medal and said, "Oh wow!" But at any rate, I wanted to slip that in. I may write a piece. You know, a pothead is the greatest Olympian in modern history.
And for those of us asthmatics, we can only look on as spectators.
Yeah, well, you know, given what he's done, I don't smoke pot anymore, but I certainly advocate it. Being legal, and given that the aerobic demands of swimming, it's amazing that he could do it. Now I am looking online. Now there is a YouTube called Michael Phelps Smoking Weed. Anybody who wants to follow up on this, let's see if it's still open. It's a minute and 17 seconds. Michael Phelps smoking weed, bong picture. There you go. So take a look. This is our greatest Olympian.
There he went.
So let's not argue any further about the impacts of marijuana as being. Let's just say marijuana is a gateway drug to winning 21 gold medals at the Olympics. How's that? All right. So
all right.
Having covered the territory, we're now going to get down to the business of the day, which is the potential theft of the 2012 election. Bob Fitrakis and I have just put out a book. It's in the process of getting up online. It should have been online today, but it's not. We're hoping it will be within the next day or two, called Will the GOP Steal America's 2012 Election? It's over 300 pages long in terms of as an ebook, but the initial essays are relatively short. It has a foreword by an introduction by that scurrilous investigative reporter Greg Powers to really open this issue for many of us way back in following the 2000 election. Now you have a book coming out, Greg. Why don't you tell us about?
Okay,
the book
I don't want to confuse people with the two books, but I'll give them. And by the way, I do want people then tomorrow or the next day, please go to Harvey's site. What is your site, by the way?
Freepress.org.
So it is at the freepress.org site.
It will be
okay.
At freepress.org, and my own is harveywasserman.com. Imagine.
Okay,
it,
and so, know. Yeah, go to freepress.org, and you'll download this terrific tome. It's they're selling it at a dirt cheap price.
Yeah,
free, of
we'll sell for $4.99, actually.
$4.99. You can't beat that, man. I mean,
$4.99 for the 99% is what it is.
Yes, $4.99. I actually, on my last DVD, I required $25,000 if you're part of the 1% donation.
right.
No
right.
One
the
admitted.
Koch brothers log on to buy a copy of the book. It's $25,000 for them.
Yeah, I mean, why not? The everyone has a price. But I do want to say I wrote the foreword because it's a terrific book because I one of the things is I think people have to look at your brilliant history of election theft. You know, it didn't start with Catherine Harris.
No.
You know, she just put the makeup
Secretary
on
of State
it.
Of Florida.
You know? The former Secretary of State of Florida, who we'll get there, but the terrific history of vote theft going all the way back to Thomas Jefferson. Of course, you could have taken it back to Julius Caesar, but that doesn't mean that means we're always shafted and democracy never works. It's just that it means that the fight is never over with.
Right.
So, you know, very, very good stuff. You can't miss it. As I say in my introduction, Bob and Harvey are very weird because while the rest of us are trying to get tans or get some action or whatever this summer, they're busy looking for where the votes are going to be hidden, and bless them for it. Now, I have to say that I'm kind of guilty of killing my summer that way, too. I have a book coming out, and drum roll, please, Billionaires and Ballot Bandits. Billionaires and Ballot Bandits.
We like that. That's good.
And, yeah. And
It's the same alliteration as Better Business Bureau.
Yes. In fact, actually, they sued us, and so did the BB Gun Lobby.
Right.
Billionaires and Ballot Bandits, How to Steal an Election in 9 Easy Steps, with an introduction by that scurrilous law professor Robert F. Kennedy, who says that in the book that Karl Rove should be in jail, who says that that the Koch super PAC is treasonous, and then he really gets down. Then he gets kind of tough. Okay, that's when it gets tough. So just the introduction by Kennedy is worth it. And even better, while you can read Greg Palast, writings, my children won't, but you do, and I appreciate it. But you have a 50-page comic book by Ted Rall. So, and you can pre-order this thing because it's not out till next month. And you can pre-order it at ballotbandits.org, ballotbandits.org, or when you go to gregpalast.com and get that Fukushima story, you'll see the cartoon of the industrialist watching the votes being stuffed into his own bank vaults, the Ted Rall cartoon. Click on that and pre-order the book and get the real info. But for those who don't know Greg Palast, and, you know, if you're listening to this show and, you may have wandered in here, I'm the reporter that for BBC Television uncovered how Catherine Harris, that's the Secretary of State of Florida, former, how Catherine Harris called tens of thousands of black voters felons, removing them from the Florida voter rolls in 2000 because they were criminals. However, when I checked and got the information, I discovered that their only crime was voting while black. And by the way, people do ask me, and this is in Billionaires and Ballot Bandits because I do go back a bit to 2000, because people ask, how many of those 94,000 people on the list were felons? And how many do you think, Harvey?
Two.
Well, I asked the Attorney General. I said, would you arrest someone who a felon who illegally registered to vote in Florida, committed another crime? He said, absolutely. I said, well, how many have you arrested? He said, well, none, but we have 6 open cases. I said, we have 94,000 names from Catherine Harris. And he kind of chuckled. He said,
right.
Well, that's her list.
Right.
94,000 people targeted to lose their vote. And by the way, I'm not guessing that these are black people, because next to their name in the state of Florida, you have your race listed, B-L-A,
really?
And if and W-H-I. And that, by the way, the reason for that is that that's required by the Civil Rights Act, because it was originally done to protect black people by tracking to see if they are allowed to vote. And now that they use computers, they used it as a matching criteria to remove people. So if a black guy named Will Smith, and actually let me give you, this is a here's a real case that I have in Billionaires and Ballot Bandits, okay? Bobby, what's Bobby's last name? It was, I think, Bobby Miller. Okay, Bobby Miller in lost her vote in Florida because a Robert Miller had committed a felony crime. Okay, so Mrs. Bobby Miller lost her vote in Florida because in another state, Robert Miller had committed a crime. And listen to this: he committed it in 2014. Criminal of the future. Uh-huh. This is how it was being done. Now, was that the evil Catherine Harris? No. This is her successor. This is what they are doing right now. You think it's a Catherine Harris game is over? Harvey, I know you're naive. I know you think that everything in America, that all the votes are counted, and that everything is lovely, but...
Well, all right, well, listen,
Harvey,
Greg Powers,
coming.
The great Greg Powers, we're going to take a break here. In all fairness, Greg, I believe many of those people were not black who were disenfranchised. They were actually Hispanic. But we'll get back to that. I'll take this break. We'll be back with Greg Powers talking about the theft of the upcoming 2012 election.
Down flooding suburbia, mudslide, traffic jam. Family, community, healthy children.
Great, the wonderful Dana Lyons singing the Soiltopia song. Those of you who know Dana's work, go check out the Cows with Guns video. More than 2 million views, Greg. I don't know if you've ever seen Dana Lyons' Cows with Guns. It's a real classic. It's become the anthem of the vegan movement, actually. We're on with Greg Powers talking about stolen elections. Greg, you mentioned the history we have in our new book, Will the GOP Steal America's 2012 Election? There is, as you mentioned, a historical section, and stolen elections actually in the United States for the presidency date back to the year 1800. Now, technically, the election wasn't stolen. It was all perfectly legal, but in 1800, Thomas Jefferson was defeated by John Adams, the incumbent, and Thomas Jefferson was vice president. John Adams was president. That's how the system worked back then. They changed it after the 1800 election. But Jefferson ran against John Adams, and he lost among the white population, which was the only one allowed to vote. But because of the 3/5 bonus, which John Adams had actually helped approve at the Constitutional Convention, the slave owners in the South were given 3/5 of a vote for every slave in the South. And as a result of that, instead of losing, Jefferson would have lost, I've seen various calculations, but I think he would have lost in the Electoral College 63-61. Instead, he won 73-65.
Right, this is the legal theft. And that's very important to understand. It's two kind of vote theft, which you bring out in Will the GOP Steal the 2012 Election. There is the vote theft, which is like the, what Catherine Harris did, which is actually illegal. It's a crime. She's a criminal, which means that she shouldn't be allowed to vote in Florida, but that's a different issue. And either should Jeb Bush, who in my book, Billionaires and Ballot Bandits, I show you how Jeb Bush personally got involved in wiping out the voters, and so he shouldn't be allowed to vote either. I mean, right. I want to be careful about that, because I've always, in almost all states of the union, especially if you're listening to this, for example, in Ohio, you can vote if you have a felony crime record. This is one of the big mistakes that's made in America. It's only a few of the old Ku Klux Klan states that have those no felon vote rule.
All 11 states of the former Confederacy, which I can name but won't, it was convicted felons were not allowed to vote, and that disappeared. That was part of the the Klan, the Jim Crow era in the Old South, which actually has just gone nationwide with voter ID, and we can talk about that in a minute. But only three of the states remained with the ban on felons voting, and one of them was Florida.
Yes, and so one thing I do want people to listen to, if you did a little smoke in your wayward youth or your wayward middle age, or
you mean like
your
Barack
retirement,
Obama, George Bush,
home,
and Bill Clinton.
Then and you got busted and then have a felony on your record, you can vote in Ohio as long as you've served your time. You can vote in almost every state in America once you've served your time. Sometimes it includes also parole or whatever. But one of the biggest voting blocks, which is not registered in America, is not Hispanics, is not young people. The biggest unregistered voting bloc in the United States are people who have a felony record and think that they can't vote because that's what they hear. In fact, a lot of people will go in and try to register, and they say, oh, you've got a felony record, you can't register. That's not true. That's when you go to gregpalace.com. But there are about 11 million people in America who are citizens, who serve their time, and can now vote. It's only in, like, Ku Klux states like Florida. And when I don't say that, you know, just randomly, as you know, Harvey, from Harvey's book, is that these laws are literally written by the Ku Klux Klan to keep blacks out. Because they also know, as you well note in your book, it's not whether people should be allowed to vote who have committed a crime. After all, the President of the United States said he did a little blow. The before him did a lot of blow, Mr. W. The one before him didn't inhale, he said, and et cetera, et cetera. Al Gore talked about experimenting with drugs as if he were wearing a white lab coat and drugs and had a little clipboard measuring. Ah, that was a good one.
I heard Al Gore after he experimented with pot, experiment with some chocolate cupcakes. You know about that?
Well, you know, and Tipper was not one of them. The I'm allowed to be mean about that because she's, you know. But at any rate,
you and Tipper had a bad date.
Yeah, but what the thing is that it's not about who committed crimes, who gets sentenced for them in America. But nevertheless, most states, and by the way, the two people that try to reverse those laws and allow people with felony convictions to vote are one George W. Bush when he was governor of Texas. Give him credit. He changed that law there. And in Florida, Charlie Crist, and they immediately removed Charlie Crist from the Republican Party, reminding him that it's not about equity, it's not about fairness, it's about not about citizenship rights, it's about stealing the vote. Right. And he forgot what he was supposed to be doing as a Republican, so he got replaced by Mr. Rubio. So there you go. Anyway,
Greg,
so
what do you
books,
think, going into this 2012 election, mm-hmm. what do you think are the odds that the Republican Party could steal it?
Well, 100% that they're going to steal at least 6 million votes. And by the way, when I say Republicans, Democrats will be involved too, but to a lesser extent. That's for historical reasons. Remember, it's Democrats who wrote the Jim Crow laws and Republicans who undid them. But right now, the historical swing is that it is the Republicans who are removing voters, mostly of color. And so the question is, will the 6 million make a difference?
And we had, not just in the South.
Yeah, everywhere. I mean, and understand, the biggest steal of all will be in the Southwest. When the Hispanic vote's being wiped out. If you read Billionaires and Ballot Bandits, and please go to ballotbandits.org where you can download the first chapter for gratis. Ballotbandits.org. Just get that first chapter, get it around. And one of the things, is that there are very few people know is that 19.4%, that is one in five voters, in case you went to a public school in the United States, one in five voters in Colorado have been removed from the voter rolls by the Republican secretaries of state. One in five voters in Colorado. And guess what their color is? There are 171,000 unregistered Hispanics suddenly. This was a blue, deep blue, sky blue state. But now it ain't because of this massive purge, which has gone unheralded, which would make the purge in Colorado makes Catherine Harris look like Martin Luther King.
Well, how are they doing it? Describe the mechanics of what they're doing in Colorado, please.
Ah, well, it begins, if you read Billionaires and Ballot Bandits, it begins with something called the Help America Vote Act, drafted by George Bush and Karl Rove. Now, when Rove and Bush tell you that they want to help you vote, look out. And one of the things that it did, after, when people were horrified by what Catherine Harris did, blocking voters.
That's
important.
They
turned it, they made the national law a requirement. They literally required every Secretary of State, they empowered them and required them that every Secretary of State in America should become their own little Catherine Harris and start purging the voter rolls of suspect voters. Now, someone who's suspicious is obviously someone with not the the Republican skin tone, right? And so that's, in fact, it's not only purging voters, but blocking voters from registering. We've had massive registration drives. People keep wondering, oh, Hispanics. The New York Times actually wrote a story that said that the reason why Hispanics are not registered at the level whites are, and this is a quote from the New York Times, is the culture of apathy and inactivity. In other words, them lazy Mexicans, you know, all they want is their siesta. They don't want to vote. In fact, the U.S. Census Bureau did a survey and found out that Hispanic voters and black voters are the most motivated to vote of any ethnic group in America. So how could they be the most motivated, but the least registered? The answer is when they send in their forms, they throw them away. To give you an exact number, in California, the biggest Hispanic state in America where they have massive registration drives, 42%, and I want to repeat that number, Harvey, 42% of voters had their registration forms rejected, and almost none of them knew it until Election Day when it was, ha, 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 you're not registered, because they did not find, they found their forms or their names suspicious or difficult. And I got this information, by the way, from the for a couple of years, there was a Democratic Secretary of State, Deborah Bowen, and my co-author and I, Bobby Kennedy, spoke with her, and she's saying, you know, these are Filipino names, these are Asian names, these are Islamic names, people mix up, you know, Muhammad and its spellings, et cetera, when they're being input by the state or when the state is analyzing whether these are suspicious voters. So 42% of the forms are not being entered onto the voter rolls, and that was in the West, pretty much the Hispanic vote.
Well, Who's running the purge in Colorado?
The purge was kicked off by the woman I call the Purgeon General, Danetta Davidson, and for her wonderful work purging the Hispanic vote, George W. Bush had her named the chairwoman of the United States Elections Assistance Commission. Now, when George Bush wants to assist you in your election, look out. So that's the same joke twice, but it was slight variant. Now, Danetta Davidson became head of the whole nationwide operation for purging, pushing secretaries of state to reject voters, to remove them. By the way, you think you're registered? Forget about it. 22 million people have had their names purged from the voter rolls this year in America. 22 million. Yours may be on it. Like Zach is sitting here, and he should know better. Jeez, already, Zach. He went in to vote, and it said he was inactive. Now, he's been voting in every election, but he didn't read the little thing that you can get from ballotbandits.org right now. You go to ballotbandits.org. It said 7 ways to beat the ballot bandits, and number 2 is register and re-register. Make sure you're actually registered. Get online, look up your name, and make sure it's still there. It doesn't say inactive, felon, insane, because in some states, insane is you're not allowed to vote, though in Mississippi it's required. So, you know, different states have different rules on insanity. But, you know, so there's – just see if you're still registered and how you're registered, because now with signatures, if you added – if you were Harvey Wasserman Jr. or the 18th and you didn't put the 18th when you sign, you'll lose your vote and your vote will be thrown out. And so that's what I'm saying, is that we had Danetta Davidson, who was lifted up to a national chieftain as Purgeon General in charge of purges nationwide. We have Republican secretaries of state – especially in places like Arizona, who have gone on a purge crusade. You know, partly that's Obama's fault. He took the Democratic governor of Arizona and lifted her, you know, Murphy's Law, lifted her to a cabinet position of incompetence and head of Homeland Security, leaving the Secretary of State, a Republican freak named Jan Brewer, to become the governor of that state. And that's why Arizona has become, has basically, you have a massive brownout. You have a pogrom against brown voters. And by the way, in Billionaires and Ballot Bandits, I have a section going to Arizona for BBC television. And I go to the infamous tent city prison of Sheriff Joe R. Powell, who's right now under a civil indictment for harassing and targeting and profiling Hispanic citizens. And the question is whether they are profiling Hispanics to intimidate them and stop them from voting. And he says, no, this is all about stopping illegal aliens. And when you walk in, you'll love this story, it's from Billionaires and Ballot Bandits. When you walk into his prison, there's a giant sign that says, no aliens allowed. And I went right through with my chief investigator, who is not a citizen, by the way. But she was had something better than a citizenship card. She had white skin. She's Swiss. And they let her right through.
So if a UFO lands and the space aliens come out, they're not going to be allowed in this facility.
No, if they're white, they'll be allowed to vote. You know,
yeah, right. We're talking with Jack Thomas.
If they're brown, their spaceship will be ticketed and searched for dope.
Yeah. We're talking about with Greg Palast, author of Ballot Boxes, Billionaires and Ballot Bandits. Talking about the stolen election, stolen elections in the past in the United States. Just for the record, from will the GOP steal America's 2012 election? The elections that we know have been stolen in the United States, legally stolen in 1800 by the use of the 3/5 bonus, which gave credit to slave owners for 60% of each of their slaves, but did not allow the slaves themselves to vote. The election in 1824 was stolen by John Quincy Adams over Andrew Jackson, the horrible Andrew Jackson, my least favorite president, with a manipulation of the Electoral College. Jackson actually beat John Quincy Adams in the popular vote about 150 to about 113,000 votes. In 1876, the election was stolen. Rutherford B. Hayes clearly lost to Samuel Tilden, and used the Electoral College to steal the vote, and then pulled the troops out of the South. Unfortunately, tragically ending Reconstruction. The election was stolen in 1888. Grover Cleveland roundly defeated Benjamin Harrison in the popular vote, but lost in the Electoral College. 1896, we believe the popular vote was stolen, as well as the Electoral vote, by Mark Hanna, who was the Karl Rove for William McKinley, the senator from Ohio, who became president, defeating William Jennings Bryan and destroying the populist movement in the United States. In the coming 30 years, Eugene V. Debs ran as the socialist candidate for president in 1900, 1904, 1908, 1912, and 1920. He was by far the most popular public figure in America. People loved him. He was the leader of the radical labor movement and the Socialist Party, and he never was credited with more than 1 million votes, although we know that's completely impossible. In fact, in 1916, Eugene V. Debs ran for Congress from his home in Terre Haute, Indiana, and in his district, despite the fact that his wife and family and many, many admirers lived in his congressional district, Eugene V. Debs got 0 votes for Congress. I love that. In 1916, the election was stolen again in 2000. There's a lot of talk that the election in 1960 was stolen. There's no doubt that Illinois was stolen or bought, as shall we say, by John Kennedy's father, Joseph Kennedy. But it turns out, if you look at the Electoral College map, Richard Nixon could have won Illinois and still have lost the presidency. And people say Nixon was such a great patriot, he didn't challenge it to not upset the country. That's nonsense. The reason he didn't challenge it was because he still could have won Illinois. He could have won Illinois and still lost the election. The electoral vote, Kennedy had 303, Nixon 219. Illinois was won by 27. Well, it counted for 27, and that wouldn't have done it. We do know, thanks to Greg Palast and particularly and the black box voting organization, Barbara Harris, that is it Barbara Harris? What is her last name?
Yeah.
Bev Harris. That 2000 was stolen, and we know from the reporting Bob Patricius and I did from Columbus that and many others, including Greg, that 2004 was stolen. The question now is 2008 was not stolen because tens of thousands of people who supported Barack Obama got out and really monitored the vote. Do you think that's going to happen again in 2012, Greg Palast?
Yeah, it's both the monitoring and the theft. I have to say that when Bobby Kennedy and I did the investigation for Rolling Stone in 2008 and for BBC television, and we found that actually 2008 was probably the dirtiest election that we've had in generations. But Obama actually won by such an overwhelming and crushing amount in the key electoral states that it didn't make a difference in terms of the election. But according to the University of Minnesota, that there were six Senate races which went to the GOP through various improper vote manipulations.
Right. And we believe also the governor of Ohio, John Kasich, was also the benefactor of a stolen election in 2010.
Yeah, I mean, it's impossible demographics in Ohio. So, I mean, one thing that I would look if, and by the way, let me add a couple of others. In 2004, we uncovered, and this was part of the theft of the election there, and in 2004 we uncovered for BBC a system called caging, which is created by Karl Rove and his assistant, Tim Griffin. And his assistant is Mike Rhodes, who has, and Kennedy said that they should be in jail. Griffin is in Congress, a different type of prison. Rove is running, across the GPS. And Rhodes, this guy who committed this criminal act called caging, I'll explain what it is in a minute, but he's running the campaign of a guy named Mitt Romney.
Right.
Now,
so tell us what caging is, Greg.
Caging is when you send out letters to voters of, and in this case, Rove and Griffin and the gang sent letters to voters of color all over the country, especially starting in Florida. And when the letters came back as undelivered, they would challenge the right of these voters to vote, saying that their addresses were illegitimate. Now, that might sound offhand like, well, that's why not? If someone's not at their home address and says do not forward and they don't live there, then they shouldn't be voting. They've made up their address, except for one thing. Why? So, well, the first thing I looked at, the biggest list, was from the Jacksonville Naval Air Station. Now, Harvey, why would a soldier, a sailor, an airman not be at home during a war?
Right, they're off.
Well, and what it is so literally, you know, and, you know, this was the top of the nightly news in BBC, the front page of the Guardian papers. Nowhere in America, the Republicans massively challenged the absentee ballots, the mail-in ballots of voters on active duty overseas. They challenged the votes of soldiers. We have their names. We have the list. This is what they did, and this is what Bobby Kennedy, a law professor, said these guys should be in prison. Get that story, Billionaires and Ballot Bandits, ballotbandits.org. We'll show you these caging lists. So they mail out the vote. It comes back undeliverable because the guy's in Iraq or he's in Afghanistan or whatever. And then when they mail in their ballot, they lose their absentee. They lose their vote, and they don't even know it. They don't even know it. Only one state, Oregon, systematically tells you if there's a problem with your absentee ballot because it's a mail-in only state. But other states, you mail in your ballot. And by the way, don't mail in your ballot. For God's sake, don't go postal. That's rule number one. Go to ballotbandits.org, 7 ways to beat the ballot bandits. Number one, it's a one or it's a two-sided sheet you can download. Get it? Even if you don't get the book, get this. Don't mail in your ballot because you don't know, you know, you don't know where that. You stick it in a mailbox and you really think that they're going to count that ballot. They know your zip code. They know who you are. They, in Ohio, as your great work with Bob pointed out, the absentee ballots were rejected because they had the wrong size, wrong weight of envelope, even though that was the envelope provided by the state.
Well, it was the one that was in Secretary of State J. Kenneth Blackwell's office. The local newspaper, in a rare bit of initiative, went into his office, and they were talking with him, and they took some ballots, and they discovered that the ballots that were in his office would actually have been thrown out under his regulations. So that was Jake and his black girl who supervised the theft of the 2004 election.
Yeah,
Greg Palast, author of Billionaires and Ballot Bandits, why do you think that neither Al Gore nor John Kerry has been willing to come forward and talk about the theft of the two elections of, that they won in 2000 and 2004? Do you have any psychoanalytic insights here into what their problem is?
Well, to cram into Al Gore's tiny mind is, I can't crunch up that small. So I'm not going to try. But in the case of John Kerry, he's conflicted. Of course, that was one of his problems. He's always conflicted. But it was interesting. He was asked that by a student in Florida who asked Kerry, held up my book at the time called
Hurry, hurry, Greg. Hurry up.
Okay. And he said, why did you give in? And before Kerry could answer, the kid was tasered.
Yelling,
don't tase me, bro. But Kerry said, yeah, Palast was right. I read the book.
God, that's good. Bye. Greg, as the election approaches, we're going to have you back when your book comes out. Greg Palast, author of Billionaires and Ballot Bandits, our own book, Will the GOP Steal America's 2012 Election, will be up at freepress.org this week. Thank you so much for listening. Next week, we'll be talking to Dr. Lodi about cancer, alternative treatments to cancer, on the Solartopia Green Power and Wellness Show. We go out, as usual, with the wonderful Dar Williams. Thank you, Matt, and the crew at PRN-FM, and we'll hear you next week on the Solartopia Green Power and Wellness Show.